I'm Indy Todd. Welcome to The Point. According to U.S. Census figures, the number of American children being raised solely by grandparents doubled in the decade between 2000 and 2010, from 2.4 million to 4.9 million. While the majority of grandparents find great joy in parenting, there are numerous challenges when seniors find themselves unexpectedly raising another family. Today, we look at some of those challenges and the supports and services that are available. Joining us in our Woods Hole studio, Carrie Bickford. She's Secretary of the Massachusetts Commission on the Status of Grandparents raising grandchildren. She's also raising two grandchildren with her husband, Rick. Carrie, good to see you again.
You too, Mindy.
And Connie DeLego is a former commissioner, director of elder affairs for Plymouth. She's also the facilitator for the Grandparents Raising Grandchildren Support Group in Plymouth. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
And on the phone, Earl Skip Buck, commissioner with the state status of grandparents raising children and just retired CEO of Family Continuity Incorporated. Skip was raised by his grandmother. Good morning, Skip.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Sure. Carrie, tell us more about when and why the state began a commission on the status of grandparents raising grandchildren.
Okay. Well, in 2008, Governor Patrick signed into law what was known as the Child Advocate Bill, and that included the establishment of this commission. The commission, consisting of 15 individuals, were assigned the task of supporting grandparents raising grandchildren and looking into the various issues that were being raised at that time. And so the first commission was sworn in actually in, I think it was September 2009, Connie?
I believe so. Mm-hmm.
So I mentioned some national statistics. Do we have state statistics on the number of grandparents involved in raising?
Skip, do you have those state statistics?
Well, there are really two kinds of statistics. There are somewhere in the neighborhood of 40,000 grandparents and other relatives raising that are primary caretakers of grandchildren that are recognized. I say that because the vast majority of grandparents who are involved in raising caregiving are not recognized at all. Certainly in my family, grandparents take care of grandkids, and sometimes they're reluctant to or in no way likely to report that. Mm. So I'd say that probably there are probably 3-to-1 or 4-to-1 number of grandparents who are involved in part-time caregiving, full-time caregiving, caregiving to the entire to the mother and father as well as the children, all varieties of families, and it's difficult to pin down. But I think it would be easy to say that there are close to 100,000 grandparents that are involved in caregiving for grandchildren right now.
Now, you embarked on a listening tour when the commission was formed, Carrie. What were some of the common themes that you heard from grandparents?
Well, yes, the listening tour, we began in the fall of 2009, and it went into the winter of 2010, I believe. And there were sort of, we had to finally streamline the information we were getting into prioritized categories. And what we found was that people were really in need of accurate information. They were getting inconsistent information in every place they went, and it was never they couldn't get any kind of a consensus on what the what was going on. So that made us start the information and referral subcommittee. Also, one of the big complaints from grandparents was that legally they were not only were they raising these grandchildren, but financially they were being hit by these legal fees, and they didn't feel that the legal community was even sort of up to date on what was going on with grandparents raising grandchildren. So we formed a legal subcommittee. We actually have several lawyers on the commission who've just been incredible. And I'd like to call out Lynn Girton, who's been phenomenal. And she chairs that subcommittee. One of the other huge things that we heard was that grandparents need support. Mm-hmm. And so we have support groups all over the state that we not only have identified, but have also been up and running since the commission has been working. At one point, we actually had money that was coming in to support those groups. And that is not the case right now, but we're working on that. So, and those support groups are also listed on our website. Mm-hmm. The final thing is that the finances were a big issue and continue to be a big issue because we think that we've, jumped one hurdle, and then we, you know, there's another one right in front of us. And so, you know, a lot of things from taking care, a lot of grandparents have to go back to work to get, you know, an additional income to support these grandchildren. And what do you do with young children when you work? You need childcare.
You spend your money that you make
exactly.
on childcare, yeah.
And in some cases, the childcare is more expensive mm-hmm. than the income, than that second income. So, you know, we were looking at trying to get grandparents identified as a priority population for a childcare subsidy, but that's another story.
Mm-hmm.
But things like that.
Connie, you're nodding your head at everything
yeah.
she's
yes,
saying.
Yes, I am, because we were together at the beginning of the commission.
You want to come a little bit closer to that microphone?
How's that?
Yeah.
Okay, if you don't mind, I want to back up a little bit
sure.
to pre-commission, which is when we did have a support group. There were some other support groups going on. And through my state senator at the time, Teresa Murray, well, yours too,
yeah. mm-hmm.
she was very much aware of the situation that was going on, and a couple of our representatives. And we went into Boston to advocate a few times, and I met with Representative John Lepper at the time. And he's the mainstay behind this whole thing, because he also was raising grandchildren at the time.
He's the force.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he is. Mm-hmm. He's the force with us. And he welcomed this input, you know, and he had others, and he held congressional hearings and such legislative hearings, and really pushed at the time. Like Carrie said, we were pushing for money and information, because some of these grandparents are, if not destitute, close to it. Seriously.
Yeah.
And so we were just, I went down there trying to get money. And what Representative Lepper was trying to do is get something going so the state would be understanding of this situation, because grandparents are woefully underrepresented. It's just something we put aside, you know. Okay, grandma's taken care of. We don't have to worry about those kids. And, I mean, I could go on and on about that part. But, I mean, the result of what value the grandparents are to the state is astronomical. I don't have the numbers, but it's in the millions and millions of dollars that grandparents are saving the state by taking care of these kids.
I just heard a statistic that it's $4 billion.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Nationally?
Oh, nationally. Wow. Mm-hmm.
So,
See, that's amazing. And so this, one more.
Go ahead, yeah.
When we did the listening tour, it was pan mass. It was across the whole state. You know, to try and get equal representation, you know, from all of the grandparents across the state. And I think it really sparked a whole interest, you know, in what's going on with that. I'll stop here.
I think the support groups are really important. And I'm also a grandparent raising a grandchild, which is what got me so interested in this topic, because, you know, you think, that's not so unusual. But there are so many, the numbers of, when the pediatrician started telling me about the support group, and I'm like, really, there's a support group? And then you start looking around and you see the numbers of these grandparents raising grandchildren. It's kind of mind boggling, really. It really is. So, Carrie, some of the ways that grandparents begin caring for grandchildren, there's informal and formal. Talk a little about the options. There's, you know, informal guardianship, adoption. Talk about the different options.
Right. And, so that was the other thing, was that we had grandparents coming to us saying, this is the situation. I'm really worried that the Department of Children and Families is going to take this child. You know, what do I do? And we would hear about other situations where there wasn't a formalized arrangement, which can really become a problem if you don't formalize it in some way for you and for the child. So we actually started listening to these issues that were being raised, and started writing these informational flyers that we call Grandparents, You Are Not Alone. And we have one actually up on the website right now, and it's called Choices on Custody. So the first one is informal custody, and that's probably, as Skip said, the most common one and the one we don't really have a handle on. Mm-hmm. But that's when grandparents are basically taking the day-to-day responsibility of children without any kind of a formalized arrangement. There's the guardianship, which occurs at a family court, you know, in probate court. And it's a very easy process. But if you feel that the child, and you have documented that the child or the children are in danger or are not being cared for, and you can document that in front of a judge, and you feel like you need to take temporary custody until, you know, you could explore what the further options are, that is that happens at your local probate court. But you need to go in prepared and with the facts, because they don't just take people's children away,
right,
as we all know. Sometimes the Department of Children and Families gets involved, but it's not a situation where they will remove the children, and they will sort of recommend that you go to the probate court and take guardianship. On the other hand, if the children are in danger and the Department of Children and Families gets involved, that's a whole nother road. Mm-hmm. And we have a whole flyer that's called When DCF is Involved. And that's really a very specific process that you have no control over.
Right.
I mean, you become a partner in that work. And of course, there's adoption. Some children, for whatever reason, can't go back to their mother or their father, and grandparents become, you know, the adopting parents.
And sometimes a grandparent may want to adopt, but to do that, you have to terminate the parental rights of the mother and father.
Which is very hard for most grandparents. And I would say that you would see most often children in permanent guardianship as opposed to children who are being adopted by their grandparents.
Can grandparents foster their grandchildren?
Yes, they can.
So yes, what are the pros and cons of fostering versus gaining guardianship or adoption?
Good question.
Excellent.
Well, so a lot of grandparents have preferred the fostering route because there are certain advantages through the Department of Children and Families that are not available to grandparents who assume guardianship. One of them is the child care issue. That becomes, at least temporarily, something that the Department of Children and Families can help with. There's also the daily subsidy. I think it's, I don't know what it is now. I want to say it's between $18 and $20 a day. It's under $600 a month, but that's a huge help to grandparents who were not expecting to raise this grandchild and who need diapers and formula and clothing and all the other things that they weren't anticipating. So
that they no longer have in their house because they've already raised their kids and
gotten
rid of all that stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
So, the other thing I think that's really good about the fostering situation, and I hear this in the support groups coming out of the mouths of other grandparents, is that there is another, at least one more set of eyes, and you know that there's more, helping to make sure that the child is safe and that the child doesn't go back to the parents until the determination has been made that that's a safe situation to go back to, because some grandparents are really afraid that, you know, their children will end up in a situation that they might have begun in.
Right. So if you're concerned about the safety and welfare of your grandchildren, your option is to talk to DCF or go to probate court and ask for temporary guardianship while you figure it out.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And sometimes it's out of your hands. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's been reported to DCF before the grandparent, you know, even knows about it. And that's how they get the call, because there's a thing called, you know, kinship care, where DCF will look for a family member who can temporarily care for the child. And so sometimes you get the call directly from DCF, and that may be the first time you're aware that something's going on, especially if your family doesn't live nearby.
Yeah. Could I interject something here, too? Part of the biggest problem for grandparents that are newly bringing in their grandchildren is lack of information that's out there. And uneducated, I'm sorry, but uneducated people in the courts and in the offices, you know, caseworkers even. That's why this commission was formed, to try and get that information in one place so that people have something, you know, some place to find out. So I would promote this.
Yeah,
I'm sure
and
we're
going to have a
end.
Link on our website to all this information, capeandislands.org.
Wrong information is predominant, too. People just get the wrong information. They go to court and they're told you better adopt or you better take custody. There's so many options, and you really have to, it's personal to each situation.
Well, and I'll say sometimes, and Skip, feel free to chime in too. Sometimes, you know, as you're looking at this, hiring a lawyer is very expensive, but you can also, there's a lawyer of the day at the probate court that you can go and consult with for free.
Yes.
Or if you feel like you want to talk to a lawyer who's, you know, works in this area, you can do a consultation. Just come in and talk about your legal options with a lawyer, and maybe cost you a couple hundred bucks versus, you know, thousands if you hired them.
Well, some councils on aging, like ours, and I don't know about Sandwich, you can have a free consultation for 15 or 20 minutes to just ask us. But again, not all attorneys are up to date on all of this information, so you have to be very careful.
You do. You know, we've been really lucky on Cape Cod because we have an amazing lawyer here. Her name is Kathleen Snow, who she has, I think it's called Children and Parents is the name of her her legal firm.
We've had her too.
And she is so devoted to grandparents and children, and in a very neutral way tries to support them by giving them the right information that they need so that they can decide whether they want guardianship, whether this is something that's out of their hands and it needs to go down another path, or whether it's an adoption situation. I just actually sat in on a situation with her recently and watched her talk to this young mother, and she was amazing because she spells it out. You know, here are your options. And by the way, I just wanted to back up for 1 second, because the one thing I wanted to mention about informal custody is there is the option that the legislature passed a few years ago. It's called the caregiver authorization, so that if grandparents are in that situation, and many times they're afraid of the Department of Children and Families because maybe they have a history, or they're afraid that their grandchildren are going to be taken away, they can actually get a caregiver authorization affidavit, which allows the parents to temporarily give the grandparent or grandparents permission to make decisions about the child's, you know, medical care, education, and it can be revoked at any time, which at least is a little better than just nothing. Having nothing.
I just want to say a quick thing about DCF. In my personal case, I found them to be extremely helpful. And I think in my case, it's not a news story because everything worked the way it should. They were wonderful with information and recommendations. And so with all the bad publicity they get, I just wanted to throw that out there, that behind the scenes, they're doing some very good work as well.
I think DCF is like a lot of large organizations, and it's variable across the state and from office to office in terms of the amount of education and understanding that DCF workers have regarding grandparents. Issues. I wanted to actually add a couple of things. First, we ought to mention the actual name of the website, which is MassGRG, as Grandparents Raising Grandchildren.com, MassGRG.com. And on that website are a whole lot of pieces of information, including former newsletters and some of the one-pagers that Carrie mentioned, listings and contacts for each of the support groups across the state, a variety of articles. So that's up and running, and we encourage people to take a look at that and at least give people a start for getting information. The other thing I want to say, and as you were talking about the various ways in which grandparents can have custody or not have custody or how they get involved in caring, each one of those different doors into caring for your grandchild carries with it a variety of other things that are not tangible, like, you know, the whether you get paid a stipend or not, or whether you qualify for insurance or not, but are really intangible, and those are the relationship issues. One of the things that I think is unique about the role of a grandparent is that it's not just you and the child. It's you and your child and their child.
Right.
And I think each one of those has dynamics that can be really difficult when there is a mother and a father who are vying for custody, and the grandparents are caught in the middle, or have substance abuse problems and are okay for a while and then are not okay again, and the child gets bounced back and forth. These are all the things I think that drive grandparents really crazy, and I think really impact their own health, their own mental health, their own ability to care for themselves. And these are incredibly, you know, wonderful people. And I think that it's really important not to forget that while everybody struggles about money and those kinds of things, they also need a lot of help understanding, you know, what do I say to my child about why they're not living at home?
Right. And those are questions we are going to cover, Skip. We are talking about grandparents raising grandchildren. 866-999-4626 is our number if you'd like to chime in. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org, and we're going to talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about grandparents raising grandchildren. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number if you have a comment or a question. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We're talking with Carrie Bickford, Secretary of the Massachusetts Commission on the Status of Grandparents Raising Grandchildren, Skip Buck, Commissioner with the State Status of Grandparents Raising Grandchildren, and just retired CEO of Family Continuity Incorporated, and Connie DeLego, former Commissioner, Director of Elder Affairs for Plymouth. She's also the facilitator for the Grandparents Raising Grandchildren Support Group in Plymouth. Carrie, currently in the eyes of the law, parents have more rights than children do. So how does that man itself into these certain scenarios?
That's a hard one. You know, we wrestle with that topic all the time because the grandparents will come in and just cry and say, I have been working so hard to care for these children and to repair the damage and to, you know, get them to a place where they're happy and they're healthy and they're, you know, thriving. And then, you know, a parent shows sort of marginal improvement and wants the children back. And it's not like grandparents want to take their children's children away, but they do want to see a certain standard of care maintained. And it does seem to be that, you know, children are returned to parents have superior rights. Mm-hmm. And if they appear to be healthy and, you know, they have followed whatever directive the judge has given them and seem to be in a good place to take these children back, the judges in most cases are willing to let that happen. And the sad thing that they don't see, the judges don't see, is what happens on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, unfortunately, addiction is a disease of relapse, and it's also an easy disease to hide. And you know, that's just been a really hard thing to watch.
And addiction plays a big role in this, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I mean, this is the majority, would you say?
I would tell you without exaggerating, that 80% of the grandparents in my group in Plymouth are there because of drug overdose, heroin.
Right.
It's, you know, it used to be alcohol when we first started, but now it's the drugs. And unfortunately, like to piggyback on what Carrie's saying, rehabilitation is a huge problem, you know, and they do maintain some sobriety. I have a very sad couple. I mean, a very sad situation with one of my grandparents, a married couple, a young couple, who were just about to retire, like all of them were. And their son went out. He was hooked on heroin, and so was his girlfriend. And they had one child. So they took the child and, you know, through DCF, through the proper channels and everything, and set up really strong parameters as to how their behavior had to do, besides what DCF expected of them, what these parents, grandparents now expected of their own child to get the children back, and they passed it with flying colors. They were sober for a year. They got pregnant again, got an apartment, had a second baby, and within 4 months could not meet the rent, had no support. We're back out. It was cheaper to buy heroin than it was to buy baby food.
Mm.
And now Grandpa and Grandma are raising two kids.
Wow.
And the kid, the boy, the couple are still out there. It's horrible.
You know, the in terms of the addiction piece, I have to tell you that our chair, John Lepper, who, by the way, is 81 years old today.
Happy birthday, John.
We love you. He did an informal survey of our support groups around the state of Massachusetts last spring because he was curious to know what that statistic was. And in his informal survey of support groups, we're talking, it was 80%.
Wow.
80% of the parents, grandparents that were participating in those groups were doing so because of
addiction problems.
Addiction, you know, issues in the family or with the parents.
Back to the law. What would you like to see change?
Well, we would really like to see the child have more rights. We would like to see it be a more child-centered decision, what's in the best interest of the child. Because that's what it's really all about, what's best for this child, you know? I can tell you this story that I've never forgotten, and that is my 13-year-old girl, Kaylee, when she was 3 years old, she was interviewed by a social worker. And her mom was, you know, using drugs and having a hard time holding it together. And Kaylee was very, very devoted to her mother. But she was also very aware of the different care she was receiving from me and from my husband, Rick. And at one point, the social worker said to her, so Kaylee, who do you think who do you think you should be living with? Well, you know, if you could have it your way, what would your choice be? And she said that Kaylee looked at her and said, well, you know, I really love Mommy, but Mimi takes better care of me.
At three.
Out of the mouths of babes. Yeah. I've never forgotten that. Mm-hmm. It's a very emotional thing for me because I was so scared she was going to go back to her mom and she was going to continue to be neglected. Her mom loved her, but she was neglected because, you know, something else came first. And so, you know, the rest is history. She's been with us ever since. Her mom is deceased.
Drug overdose.
Yeah. She's a beautiful, thriving young lady, and she's been through a lot, and she's resilient, you know. But your question was, you know, I just wanted to tell the story about.
So where do grandparents' rights fall in relation to rights of parents?
Grandparents' rights are even more of a...
in some cases, non-existent. If you don't mind, I'll stop in here.
Please step in.
In my case... I'm not raising my grandchild. I have two grandchildren. I have one grandchild, grandson, who is very healthy and happy and living with my daughter, a single mom. And I had a grandson that was born when my own son was very young. And through a series of whatever, he's had a hard time with addiction. I guess I'm saying it online over the air, but at the time and. I saw the child, the baby, you know, for the first 3 or 4 years of his life. I was living also in Arizona at the time, and so I was coming home for holidays and such. And suddenly, Mom decided that we weren't good enough for the family anymore. She didn't want us to have the child, to have any connection with him whatsoever, ever again. Mm-hmm. And for two reasons. One, me being out in Arizona and having no rights at all. And even here at the time, the rights were not in my favor. The mother could just say whatever she wanted to, and she was not married to my son, so therefore she just pushed us all out of the family, and we've had no connection with this grandson for all these years. It is heartbreaking. Yeah. And in the other case, for me personally, my parents died when I was young, so I was raised by older siblings. So, you know, in terms of this law, that doesn't have anything to do with this law, but in terms of this particular law, they have to strengthen the laws for grandparents. There are many times, I mean, I know that reunification is the key and is the goal and everything, but it's just not optimum all the time. It just isn't.
Yeah. And so, you know, we all know that caring adults in a children's world are a wonderful thing. You know, it's just one of the keys mm-hmm. to a child that thrives.
It takes a village.
It does.
I say it to people all the time. I don't know what I'd do without my village. Yeah. So grandparents' rights. Good. And, you know, my village has been busy all week trying to keep me up because they know I'm having a hard time with the holidays.
Yeah.
But, you know, the grandparents' rights have... The situation is improving slightly, let me say that. And I will say that the Department of Children and Families is trying to do a better job of at least letting grandparents visit the child. Because one of the things that I see is that when the children are removed and they go to a foster family, you get these grieving grandparents. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't see the child. I didn't do anything. And now I can't see this child. Mm-hmm. And what happens? I don't know if I'll ever see this child again. I mean, we get these devastated grandparents calling us and mourning the loss of their grandchildren. And so the Department of Children and Families has gotten a lot better about trying to keep those relationships intact and allowing those visits. And I just think that the laws need to strengthen that whole family system in a way that reflects on the child like I said, it all goes back to what's in the best interest of the child, and it's the best in the best interest of the child unless the grandparents are, you know,
really bad. So have you talked with any legislators about introducing legislation on this?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Are you
kidding? In fact, we have some amazing people on the commission. We have Representative Paul Donato, who actually got us in an appropriation so that we've been able to hire a coordinator, and that just happened in the last couple of weeks that we made that hire. And so we'll have a lot more help lobbying and, you know, and making those phone calls and writing those letters and getting that kind of thing done, because we're all doing this on a volunteer basis and many of us
source,
on top
really.
Of a full-time job. So, yes, we're knocking on doors and we're...
There's plenty of grandparents raising grandchildren that could get behind this, I would think, and you know, let their legislators know.
And have volunteered. Yeah. They volunteer and say, you tell me when to be there and I will... You know, I will come.
Absolutely.
All right. Skip Stuck, I want to ask you this question. How should grandparents talk with their grandchildren about some of the issues their parents are struggling with?
Well, it's always, you know, first it's almost the question is, how do you talk to yourself about it? How do you come in touch with your own anger or aggravation or grief or sadness or feeling of blame that maybe your children didn't turn out the way you wanted them to? And I think a lot of grandparents, if they're not careful, can let those things get in the way of an honest communication with the child. What we always talk about, and I work with some groups talking about how to deal with difficult issues with the grandchild, is really first communicate a lot. I think you know, generationally people behave in different ways. In some cases, they're not used to talking a lot. I think if you talk, and the only time you talk is because there's some serious issue on the table, then I think people are very defensive and they're not used to doing it and they're not good at it. So I really suggest that grandparents go out of their way to spend a lot of time talking to the kids, that they are as honest as they possibly can be, but also understanding that their feelings for the parent can't get in the way of what the child feels. And I think Carrie used the example of how her daughter, you know, was still attached to her mother, even though she realized perhaps that she wasn't able to give her the care that she needed. And I think sometimes grandparents need to be able to get over their own feelings for that and to be able to talk about, you know, your mother or your father still cares for you, they're not able to do it right now, and not get caught into a blame game. I think the thing that hurts the most are the blame game comments.
Right. Well,
talking about how people can work together, that you know, we're all a family here. No matter what, you're living with somebody who loves you very much. Those are the kind of messages that I think help kids, you know, get by that.
Yeah, and I was going to say, Karen, I know that you tried very hard to include your son and your daughter-in-law, and you want the kids to feel loved, whether they're
Absolutely.
With their parents or not. You want everybody on the same page as far as we all love you.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Like I said, my son is doing really well, and my children now have three parents. They have my husband, myself, and my son.
Oh, that's great.
And they have to go to three of us for big decisions, and we actually have a tiebreaker now.
Oh,
so
that's
really great. But I wanted to say also in response to your question, we have a one-pager that the Department of Children and Families actually helped us to produce. It's called Talking to Grandchildren About Your Parents' Use of Alcohol or Drugs. Mm. That's also on the website. And the pointers are very much what Skip just said. Your parent has an illness. It's not their fault. The adults in your life are trying to help them with this problem, and you will be safe, and we will take care of you no matter what. And those are really just very simple messages. And there's more here, you know, the seven C's. I didn't cause it, can't cure it, can't control it.
The thing, too, that I want to bring up is the fact that these kids often get bullied in school, because especially if they're teens or preteens or in that age, you know, fifth, sixth, seventh grade to high school, and it's their parent who is a drug addict or not so much the alcohol. Well, they have an addiction, and they're being raised by their grandparents. It's generationally, too. I got two things going here. But you have the younger grandparents that are raising kids that are pretty much open, a lot more open than, say, I'm a lot older than Carrie. But there are people older than me that are raising grandchildren, and they're 75 and 80 years old. That's a completely different culture. They aren't likely to talk about these things. They aren't even likely to know how to speak about them like this. So the child goes through and goes to school, and they're lost, you know, and then the kids pick on them and bully them, and they even though you may be trying to say that this is an illness, your dad isn't that bad, or your mom, they right. love you and they have a good heart and everything else, but all they see and all they hear right. is the negative stuff, and it just makes them totally...
Well, this goes kind of back to what you were saying earlier about the fact of not having information or the right yes. information. And I have to say, I'm hoping everybody has a pediatrician like we do, but
yeah,
I mean, because that was very helpful to say, you know, there's a support group that if you want to look into, I mean, that's a pediatrician is a great place for a grandparent to get information on resources.
You have to sort of nurse that, no pun intended,
right?
That pediatrician to understand who you are and what you're doing, because yeah. we've been trying. We don't yeah. have a lot of respect.
So, yeah, like everything, there's some yeah. better than others. You know, we're talking about
the
grandparents.
Pediatrician, I think that's a, yeah. a huge point.
Absolutely. Yeah.
We love our pediatrician, and actually, JJ and his pediatrician are you know. Their buddies.
Oh, that's great.
We're talking about grandparents raising grandchildren. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. More after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about grandparents raising grandchildren with Carrie Bickford, Secretary of the Massachusetts Commission on the Status of Grandparents Raising Grandchildren, Earl Skipstuck, Commissioner with the State Status of Grandparents Raising Grandchildren, and just retired CEO of Family Continuity Incorporated, and Connie DeLego, former Commissioner, Director of Elder Affairs for Plymouth. She's also the facilitator for the Grandparents Raising Grandchildren Support Group in Plymouth. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We sort of touched on the fact that there are many grandparents on fixed incomes, and then having this sudden responsibility of raising children is a real stretch financially. There are some resources out there that I think a lot of grandparents wouldn't think of. WIC is the first one that comes mm-hmm. to mind.
Yeah,
you think,
you
know, but really anybody can go and talk to WIC and get some help as far as nutrition.
That's right.
Stuff.
Age.
Age is 5 and under.
Yeah, 5 and under. And then there's lots of resources for clothing. And
yes. We have a great community. There are a lot of resources in this community. There's also something that anyone can get who's got guardianship of their grandchild, and that's called a DTA subsidy.
What is that? Tell us what that is.
A Department of Transitional Assistance. And it's not a lot. I mean, I want to say it's under $500. I'm not positive, but grandparents tell mm-hmm. me that it has been a huge help to them because they
Keep
went from having nothing mm-hmm. to at least having something to work with. One of the other things that has, you know, been a controversial topic with grandparents is the fact that they feel like they should be entitled to food stamps for the grandchildren, but they have to be eligible to receive food stamps. And many of the grandparents who are raising grandchildren are not eligible financially mm-hmm. because
they count, you know, their income.
Maybe. Right, because of their income. And actually, it's a subject that gets me a little hot mm-hmm. because one of the things that has happened recently in Barnstable is that grandparents have lost the free lunch. They were just getting free lunch for their grandchildren. And now it is also an income mm-hmm. Driven perk.
Yeah.
And so a lot of grandparents are really upset about that because they feel like, you know, it's
they
a really people don't understand that grandparents are using their retirement funds,
like their
funds. Savings
right.
funds. They are giving up trips. Mm-hmm. They are going without so that their grandchildren can have what they need. And so a very small thing like a school lunch becomes a very big thing.
Right.
When
and so that's that little help. What about MassHealth? Is that
MassHealth is one of the best, mm-hmm.
Benefits.
Thank you. That's the word. Because if you have guardianship of your grandchild, you can apply for MassHealth, and
that doesn't count your income,
and it's not income driven.
Based on the child,
they just are automatically
so there's your health
eligible.
Insurance,
correct?
Yeah.
And there isn't even a copay on right. your prescription, so that's a huge help to grandparents.
Yeah. Can I just add one thing?
Sure.
This is why it's important. You know, we talked about the 3 out of 4 grandparents that are raising grandchildren, and they're not identified at all, that they're not connected at all. They have no formal custody
right.
at all. None of the benefits that we talked about, even though there are places we need more of them, but none of them are available to people that have a simple informal relationship. So this really is a call to encourage grandparents to investigate what their other guardianship or custody relationships can be, because those are the things that open the door to the benefits that we talked about. Without those, you really are in it alone, and if you're fortunate enough to have a family and have income and have those kinds of things, then it probably is fine. But ultimately, you know, an awful lot of grandparents who are in need, either because they're ashamed or because they don't have the understanding of the law, have not done what they should do to gain custody, and therefore are placing themselves in financial risk, placing their kids at risk because of issues around insurance and permission and those kinds of things. So I just a real a point for people to investigate what's available and understand that it's in the best interest of you and your child for there to be a clear understanding about what your guardianship and custody obligations and rights are.
Yeah, Skip, you know, that's all, you bring another good point, because I'm sure there are grandparents who are in this kind of informal situation because they don't want to upset the parents, you know, like,
exactly.
I mean, like, Mom, how dare you go and, but this is a great way to say, look, if I go and get guardianship, I can get these benefits. And so it's not about you're taking my child away from me that I'm already having you take care of. It's more of the practicality of what benefits the child.
Exactly. Going back again to, it's in the best interest of the child, and we're all working together toward that goal. And
defining that
if goal. Bring your adult child in as a partner in the work, it's a whole different thing than what a lot of grandparents are faced with, which is sort of like this sort of adversarial relationship and competition, which you really don't want.
Right. No, and it's always a crisis. No matter what, it's always a crisis. And so you're acting in a mode where, you know, your nerves are high, they're high. It's, you know, can often be very detrimental to your health, but to get the right solution and to have the right answer is tough at that point in time. That's why commission is so important in the websites.
Yeah, and we're mentioning a lot of different scenarios under which grandparents assume responsibility. As we mentioned, it could be, you know, drug or alcohol addiction, mental illness, incarceration.
Military.
So all kinds of scenarios. And I guess if you can keep it focused on the child and not whatever your issues with your own children are, you always focus, with both parents, not just your child, but the other, you know, the boyfriend or girlfriend or husband or wife, if you can keep it focused on, let's look at what's best for
let's
the
work
child.
Together.
Let's work together on this. Exactly. Maybe it makes it a little bit easier.
It's hard.
It's still hard.
Mediation.
It does. I know some people can't do it.
Yeah.
So one other thing I want to add is that the information, we know that people have a rough time gaining information. You know, there is no department for grandparent services. So you go in through the door of housing, or you go in through the door of transitional assistance or child care or whatever, and there are a lot of related questions that you won't get an answer to. What we have found, though, is that the grandparent support groups are really the place where an awful lot of grandparents get
amazing.
The basics of what they need to help them get started.
The underground, I call it.
Yeah. In the Cape, we have three communities on the Cape, Nantucket, Martha's Vineyard, Plymouth, Wareham, Connie's group in Plymouth. We have access in every community in the Cape to a support group, and those groups have been going for quite a while.
Yeah.
The people are terrific. They want nothing more than to make sure that the next grandparent coming in doesn't have to go through what they went through.
Yeah, right. Grandparents become such great advocates and such great sources of information, and they can save each other so many painful steps by just telling you how they did it and how you might want to.
And things have changed a lot since they raised their own children. So being up to date on all of that is, I would imagine, very helpful. Now, do grandfathers have different needs from grandmothers in these support groups, or are they all pretty much have the same kinds of?
They can be different. I mean, I have one grandfather in my group. I shouldn't say that. I have had more. Let me back up. We have a meeting every Thursday during the day for an hour and a half, and then we have one meeting at night on a Tuesday night where we have the kids come in and the family can come in, and we have supper and a babysitter. And usually it's at the evening meeting that we'll get the grandfathers in. And, their situations can be sometimes a little bit unique. I find Well, they're working, so they're not there. They're not always the one that's there all day with the kids, and they're very concerned. A lot of them are very concerned about their wives because they see their wives being just the older ones, especially.
Yeah,
yeah. They're ragged.
Yeah,
they're
well,
ragged.
That kind of that, but, as we get older, our energy levels aren't what they used to be. So having the stamina and energy to keep up with these kids, as I said to my husband, we're in the situation. I said, well, he's either going to keep us young or kill us.
Yeah, we'll keep it young.
Oh,
you know, and they
so
worry
true.
Too about, all right, now I was planning on, this is a gentleman, you know, grandpa, I was or grandma, but I was planning on retiring in a couple of years. I got everything all set. We're going to go away and stuff. And I might have to use this money for college. Mm-hmm. You know, I might have to, you know, just get this kid to high school or whatever. And if they eat a lot and their clothes are more expensive, you don't get jeans for $5. You know,
yeah.
It's like,
right.
What do you do? How do you handle it? And I encourage the grandfathers, the fathers, to go to the meetings as well, these support groups, right. Because to talk amongst your peers, that's the only place you can talk about
and people know what you're going through.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I was just visiting a support group recently, and there were some poignant moments, and there was this one moment where this woman was sitting with her husband, the grandfather, and talking about their retirement home, and they had to give that up, and they had to give up the location of where they wanted to live because they couldn't leave the state with the grandchild. And she just started to cry. Mm. And, you know, he kind of reached over and patted her hand, and, you know, you can just see he's solidly standing behind her and supporting her and understanding together that they're making these sacrifices because it's what they have to do. But so the grandparents... One of the things we've seen is that a lot of times the grandparents weren't coming to the group in Hyannis, and the grandmothers would come and tell us what was going on with the grandfathers. They were home and they were mad about this, and he really doesn't want to adopt. He doesn't want to do this for a lifetime. It's that just sort of, you know, the natural emotional the emotions that we feel when we realize we're in this long term forever. Right. And, you know, it's so sad because you want to get those grandparents to come in and say, talk to each other about this, right. Because everybody feels the same way. But
Carrie, talk about the flip side of that. As once you kind of get into this and into the acceptance, okay, this is what it is. It's like a magic that happens within your family.
We were talking about this actually before the show, and we were saying in my case, I sometimes forget what situation we're in because it has bonded us. Mm-hmm. It has brought family members in. The community, I feel like, has rallied around us. We have our little village of friends. We have a really good relationship with my son. The children, for us, were a focus of positive, magical energy over the years because they gave us this opportunity to forget about the bad things that were happening in our lives and to focus on the magic of, you know, and innocence of children. And so, you know, just re-experiencing Christmas, re-experiencing, you know, that first day back to school and all the magic that happens in those early years.
I had to go out and buy new cookie cutters because
I've
given all those things away.
Yeah.
Skip, I want you in this last minute or so to talk about that, since you were raised by grandparents, that special relationship, what that's meant to you.
Well, it's you know, you realize that with the community as Carrie was talking about, with the community of people who care about you, that there'll always be somebody who does. And I think I look back at it now and I realize how you know, my parents weren't perfect people, my grandparents weren't perfect people, but somehow or other they managed to rally together and raise, you know, a couple of kids who were pretty decent kids, to pat myself on the back and my sister. but it's like any family. There is, you know, there aren't very many Cleaver families running around anymore, nor if there ever were.
And that's...
what there are, I think, is if people of goodwill try hard and they know that one thing that is absolutely non-negotiable is the love that the kids are going to get, things work out pretty well. I have as many, I'm sure I have the same number of bittersweet memories about, you know, my grandmother and grandfather as people do about their parents,
right.
and it's okay.
Yeah.
It's all right. You do realize that not every family is the same, and I think it's one of the things that began to get me into the business that I got into, social work, was understanding that nothing is a cookie cutter. Yeah. And however,
I got to stop you there because we're running out of time, Skip. But I will put a link up on our website to all this information, capeandislands.org. Carrie Bickford, Skip Stuck, Connie DeLego, thanks so much for coming in and sharing this information. I'm sure there's a lot of grandparents out there that can use some help.
Thank you so much.
I'm Indy Todd. Thanks for listening.
Amy Vins produces The Point, with assistance from Jenny Junker. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH.